Thank you very much. Now, this was a problem that was, I just completing working on this while I arrived here. So in the beginning, I was quite busy and refused to give, didn't actually like to give talks. So this is the talk, that one of the talks that I promised.
That's how we ended up in Tango.
Two programs, and this will not be a talk in physics. Now, let me switch off this light because...
This one?
Yeah. Okay. So that's basically, so it means it will not be a discussion of a problem that is actually proper physics. It's more in some branch of computer science. Now we'll use, however, the methodology that we use will be methodology of physics to some extent. So most of the time I will spend explaining the motivation. Now I'm not familiar with all the computer science background. I will try to give explain the story and the motivation why it's interesting. I will try not to enter to also to issues of rigor and of technicalities. I will be happy to discuss it in private with everyone because it uses different backgrounds. So now this work. That basically will analyze a well-known problem in computer science that is called the linear programming problem. I will explain you why people like it and what the problem is, and we'll address another problem of how to define computation time of real systems. So take a real system that is a real device, it's not a digital device, and how to connect it to the issue of computation time. So this is the way the problem is posed, and we propose a scaling theory for this, and I'll explain what it is. And the technique that will be used in addition to numerical simulations will be basically of random matrix theory. Now this work was done with Asa Ben-Hur, that was a student at the Technion, in some business department, but they use computer science. Joshua Feinberg, that is basically a field theorist that was in the ITP. Chava Siegelman, that's a computer scientist, and myself. Now, the outline is as follows. I will explain what is analog computation and why is not one interested. Analog will be computation by some device that is not necessarily digital. Then I will discuss the issue of what is the computation time by this and what people call complexity. Then I will define the specific. Now we'll look at all this to a specific example, that is the linear programming problem. I will define a probabilistic model for such problem. So I will define an ensemble of linear programming problems. And then we'll study it using random matrix theory, and the motivation will be, given an ensemble of problems, we'll calculate the ensemble of difficulties of solving them. The distribution of problems, the input is a distribution of problems, the output of the calculation is the distribution of difficulties of solving them. I will define what difficulty is. What do we refer to as analog computation, and why are we interested in it? So I'll give you an example now. And to start with, there is no well-defined theory of analog computation. And our attempt was to, in some way, theorize analog computation. So first of all, there are devices that are used in the engineering devices that use some specific computational functions, like implementation of neural networks or neural networks that are used for pattern recognition. There are some VLSI devices that were planned and organized for this problem. The point is that this field now actually is not widely used because there are digital devices that are technically much better. It's a much widespread technology. So as engineering is concerned, very often this these analog-like devices are actually implemented in a digital device because they are so abundant. Now, very large scale integration. So, okay. However, there are devices that are built there's a field of neuromorphic systems that are devices that are built specifically to study specific function of the brain, like orientation, like finding a path. So what these devices do, they solve a maximum problem, they sense something, say the maximum illumination, and then this device goes to this. There are several laboratories that do it. One is in Caltech, and the other is in ETH in Zurich, and they study different devices. And this device has a circuit that solves a differential equation, and basically finds an extremum to it. Now we want to evaluate what is the computation efficiency of these processes. Then there are gene networks. You heard a talk by Boris Schreiman that we mentioned there. So this is a computation process that is done in the cell. Then there is this field, of course, that is discussed here of quantum computers that are designed as analog devices. And so these are more specific, practical questions. Well, then there are fundamental issues like the validity of the Church-Turing thesis, that basically vaguely states that each computation process can be modeled by the Turing model, and if you find a device that solves a problem that is not within the Turing model, it means that you have a counterexample to the Church-Turing thesis. So no one devised something like that physically, that works physically, but there are mathematical models that were not implemented yet physically. And this is a field that is called super Turing capabilities. Then there is one can use the analog computation that is in some way it's characterized by the fact that it's continuous as a coarse-grain theory of digital computation. This is a view of a group of mathematicians that work with Steve Smail, and the way that they like to say it, like we want to approximate grand properties of computation, and so it is like we want to write a theory of a fluid. We don't have to follow each atom, we coarse-grain it. So the same way, we try to build a coarse-grain theory. So these are the motivations. Now, what unifies them is a description by differential equations. These differential equations define in some way a dynamical system that is physically implemented. And in our case, we'll discuss a dissipative dynamical system that flows to, and will, moreover, it will flow to a fixed point. Now, contrary to the analog, to the digital computer, it's continuous in space and time. And then the issue is, there is an important question in this field: how do you measure computation time? So, and the reason is, for a digital device, you count the number of states, of steps. So you have a unit that is, a unit step. Now, that's a universal time, the universal unit of time that is one step. Now, if there is a continuum, then we don't have something like that. We don't have a universal step. And that is considered, in some way, an important problem in this field. Now, of course, if you physically implement them, and then there is a whole issue. There is a whole issue when you talk to these people. They say, okay, if there is no unit step, we can accelerate it indefinitely, but multiply the time parameter by some number, or instead of the time, look to the exponential of the time, and so on. However, when you go to build a physical device, of course, every physicist knows that you cannot do it. There is a certain time of the device. Therefore, this is one of the difficulties of designing a universal theory. Therefore, our approach will be, we look at groups of problems and compare their time. and compare the difficulty in the time. So there will be, in each group, there will be a standard problem, and compared to that standard problem, we will compare the difficulty of the other problems. And so these are the motivations for analog computation. And now, what is complexity? Complexity tells us how much time it takes to solve the problem. To solve, this means you give, you pose the problem to the computer, you start from some input, how quickly it would get to the output. And that's called complexity. And now we look at relative at the complexity in different groups. And now what we really want is to ask. We really don't ask how much time it takes, but how does this time scales with the difficulty of the problem? How does it scales with the size of the problem? So complexity will be basically defined as the growth of the difficulty to solve it, the computation time, how it scales with the size, and the size is measured in the number of bits. And we will look at polynomial problems, that the computation time grows like the size of the problem in bits to some power n. This is to distinguish it from the very difficult exponential problems that are the major interest in theoretical computer science. And this can be mimicked by dynamical, such problems can be mimicked by dynamical systems that converge to fixed points. So the dynamics is described by a system. There is a flow from some initial point to some stable fixed point. And the time of computation is given by the rate of convergence to this point. So basically, the problem is defined. You want to know the answer within a given number of bits, for example. So now if you approach exponentially, so and the fixed point is x star, so the convergence is exponential. It goes like e to the minus lambda t. Now, then we ask, when is this difference less than epsilon? For this, you have to compute a time that is longer than t epsilon. So the convergence time here is log epsilon over lambda, where log is the number of bits. So this is a simple example of such a problem. And now, for other problems,
so,
it can...
can you make the example less abstract, like...
I will give an example. I will give a specific example. In a moment, I will give a specific example that will be less... I just want to set a problem. Now, the input, what we put for the input, it can be either the initial point. This is the most natural, but sometimes the input is something different. The input is some parameter. Some parameter, and this is the example that will work. The initial point is part of the algorithm. And then you iterate it, and you ask what is the rate of convergence for the different given input, what would be the fixed point. And I will give you an example of such a problem. So I will be less and less abstract in a moment. So basically, we discuss the problem will be modeled by a dynamical system that is dx dt equals f of x and p, and I will assume it's an autonomous system. F does not depend explicitly on time, and this function depends on coordinate, the change, and on parameters. And it models some device that is used for computing. So one type of such systems are the pattern recognition problems that were modeled by Hopfield networks. That you start from an initial point at some time t equals zero, you flow and you identify some pattern. So probably most of you have seen these figures or these slides of people that give on these talks. You have some region in a complicated parameter space. some part goes to one point, so, and then they were going, were giving, in their talks they show that this corresponds to some vague picture, and then when you run this program, it you go to a clearer picture that identifies some clear pattern, like some letter, and this is, and these are different situations where this letter is broad, and always when you have a case where you have a Lyapunov function of a dynamical system, you will flow to something like that. The difficulty here is that if the initial condition is close to the boundary, what happens is it may be dominated by the boundary. So accept that. So this is one example. Another example that will be subject of this talk will be the linear programming problem. So the linear programming problem is a polynomial problem. It represents, I will explain what it is. It is basically a problem that you have, I'll define it in the next slide precisely, but what you want in this problem is to find a maximum function subject to some constraints. Now this problem is a representative of P, of all P polynomial solvable problems, and this is what's called P complete, and in the language of computer science, it's Turing reducible. All the P complete problems are Turing reducible to this problem. So now, if we don't want to use this terminology, it just represents all the polynomial problems to some extent. And now, the way that we are going to solve it, so you are interested basically in the, you have some function that has a maximum. Pardon?
It's a linear function.
Yes, it's a linear function. You have a linear function, you want to find, I will write it in a moment, you want to find its extremum subject to linear constraints. So this is what is the problem, and this is solving the Boolean polynomial time. The standard algorithms solve it if the size of the problem is n, the number of variables of this function is n, then the time it takes is n to the 3.5 times log of n, and it's built of root n times log n steps, where the cost of each step is n cubed, because it involves matrix inversion. Now in the present dynamical algorithm, the typical time to solve it is n log n. It's also polynomial, it's not something that great that it solves other problems, and this is a result of the fact that it's analog. So it's in some extent it takes advantage that the analog device can operate in parallel. And this is the same principle that you use in a quantum computer for efficiency. Okay, so now we want to see, I was asking how specifically work. So I will define the problem and then we'll give an example of this problem. So the linear problem, the problem is you have to find the maximum of a linear function ex, where c are the parameters and x are the variables, subject to the constraint that there's a matrix A operating on the variables x gives some b, and all the x's are positive. Now, n is the number of variables. X and C, the C, X variable and the C that are the parameters are n vectors. M is the number of constraints, therefore B is an m vector. And the matrix N, I will use sometimes a parameterization, A is a non-diagonal matrix, and it is decomposed in two parts. There is an M by M matrix that I will call B sometime, and there is an N minus M by M matrix that I will call N. So this will be some decomposition, and A tilde will denote the transpose. And now there is an algorithm that I will by Fibusovich that basically gives a function f that if you construct a dynamical system that operates with a function f, it will flow eventually to the optimal solution. So the fixed point of this flow is always the optimal solution. This is what he proved. And I will show you an example how it works. Now, this is not the best algorithm today. The best algorithms today work in a different way. But the point that with the best algorithms today work in a way that they adapt on the root each steps. But if you want to consider a device that will operate in this way, so you have a function f. F is a fixed function; it doesn't change. And you implement the system, and it will run. So now I have to give you to know this. I have to give you the function f that is implementing this flow to the maximum, taking into account the constraints. Before doing that, yeah, I will give you actually that, and then I will give you the example and demonstrator of this. So the flow is given by f is grad of x that is constrained that x will change only in a way that it satisfies the constraint, and is given in this way. It is a diagonal matrix x with all the x x's. Then there is the a transposed and one over a x a transposed a x, and operating on the vector c, that is the vector that is of the function that you have to maximize. And now, looking at it, you can realize, first of all, that it satisfies the constraint, because you put a x dot is the same as a grad e, and when you apply a to this, you see that you get zero. So what it means that all the variations of x satisfy always the constraint. Second, the function that you have to maximize all the time increases. So then the reason is d dt x is dx dt times grad of x. This is just the composition rules of derivatives. And then, but dx dt is grad of e, so that is a square of a vector, so that's always positive. So the way that you can visualize it, how it solves the problem, is you have the hyperplane that is e of x equals something, and it's moving with time. There is a polyheader on which you move, so you have this polyheader, and there is the plane that intersects it, and the plane goes up until it gets the highest vertex of this, and this is the way that it solves it. And so the flow is to the optimal vertex, and and this is some vertex where at the optimal vertex, of course, the constraint equation has to be solved. So for this, the bx, so these are the coordinates of the vertex, m coordinates, solve this equation. These are the last coordinates in this notation. And for n minus m coordinates, the other coordinates go to zero. So this is the optimal solution, and the solution is to find this x star. So now I'll give you an example how it works for some simple case. So a simple case, a problem that can be formulated in this way, is the max problem. Find the maximum of m numbers. So you have a list of numbers, you have to find the maximum. So I will formulate it now as such a problem. So such a problem, I define e of x is a vector of all these numbers times the variable x. Now I put a constraint that sum of the xi's is 1, and all the xi's are positive. So it will flow in the end to the end of the flow will be to a point xi, one of the xi equals to 1, and then this one will pick up the solution. Because they are positive, so the maximum of this function, you can realize, is when xi is at the maximal, corresponds to the maximum of c. So now the function f, you can calculate, the function looks in this way, so it's relatively simple. And now the solution to this equation is given in this way. But this is a formal solution. It's useless to find the maximum of it. Why is it useless? Because you have to go to the list and really see what happens to this. It's a huge list. So this is more difficult than solving the original problem. But the flow will take you to the optimal solution. Why is that? the flow will take you to the optimal solution.
So when you mean a problem, you mean just going...
Looking at the table, yes. You have, after you know who is maximal, you look at that solution. But now the flow, if you just let it flow, it will flow there. Why it wouldn't flow there? Because now I look at this formal solution, and we ask what happens. Let's denote the maximal C by Cm, and the next one by Cm bar. So the flow will be like this.
This is not the same M as in your previous term.
What was the? No, right. So there is a shortage of letters. Sorry for that confusion. It's not the same M. And then at x equals to infinity, this one is dominated by the largest one. So then what happens is, so now, so first of all, for x equal that equals to the 2xm, I divide the one where I equals to m, I divide it 2, and this is the way that it looks. It's dominated by, if I divide it by the maximal, it gives a 1, the rest gives this stuff, and no matter what's the initial point, this flows to 1. The other ones, it's dominated again by Cm, it will flow to 0. So this is how we demonstrate. So that's specific enough?
Yeah, sure. No, but you say independently of the initial point, if you are very unlucky and the initial point is 0, you don't go to...
Yeah, right. It means I have to be careful to choose an initial point that this is a set of measure 0 of conditions. If you choose the other fixed points, then you don't...
That's a terrible way of solving a single problem so far.
Right, because I want to demonstrate. And more difficult the problems, you don't see anything.
Sure.
Right. And now I want to demonstrate on it on another concept. Another concept that I want to demonstrate on it is how quickly it takes to converge. You have seen that this was the difference between the C's were the rate of convergence, and the convergence time is one of them. So now, if the CIs are integers, if you look in the in the theory of standard computer science, this computation time is bounded because the difference between two integers, the smallest one can be just one. Because if the two integers are the same, so the solution is there are two solutions for the maximum problem, and you satisfy by any combination. But now, if the CI are real, this is unbounded. Now, in computer science, what computer scientists like usually is to ask, what is the worst case? What is, given a problem, what is the bound on the worst case convergence time? For reals, it will not be defined, because the worst case is unbounded. So it's just ill-defined. But for them be in an extremely close one to the other, the probability that you will encounter such a situation is very small. So therefore, this calls for a probabilistic approach. You have bad instances, but they are very rare. So the time that you diverge is very rare. So the question now that you have to ask for a class of problems, are they really very rare, that I can neglect them or not? And so this we'll try therefore to look at. Now we have one problem, that is the max problem. I can estimate, but you tell me, well, that's a very simple problem, so that's not important. But now I will ask this question for all the linear programming problems.
But it of course depends on the maliciousness of the person giving you the list. I mean, I can give you a list in which there are two numbers that differs only in the 10 billionth place, decimal place.
Yes, you can decide. No, but I'm assuming that this. I'll now make an assumption of these problems. I will assume that the problems are not maliciously given, but they come in some way at random.
Well, so you're giving a random list.
Yes, I'll give a random list. Otherwise, I can. Well, this is one of the problems.
In you're just asking. You're given a set of random numbers. How close? What's the
This is what I will ask.
Minimum distance.
Yeah, but this is for the max problem. But now
it depends on the ensemble from which.
Of course. And so I'll give an ensemble and we'll look for it. Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. So now we look at the general linear programming problem. The general linear programming problem is given by a constraint matrix. The constraint matrix is an is on an M on N over N, where M is the number of constraints, N is the number of variables, and I would be interested in a situation when M is not 1. M is very large, N is very large, and I will see, try to see how this problem behaves. And then there is, and then now there is, this problem has a formal solution. The formal solution is we define a matrix alpha, that is the ratio between these two matrices, and then the xi behave in this way. There is a number delta I that is given by a certain equation, and there is a number beta that is given by another equation, and what you see that if all the deltas are positive, then you flow for all the x i's with I up to n minus m, all the this x I goes to zero, and the other excess, the last m excess in this list will go to some value. And so the way that it works, this x I are doing something, and there is some barrier, so they will go to straight to zero, but there is some barrier that they have to cross. It is given by beta I, okay, we don't know anything about it. And and now the convergence rate after you cross the barrier is characterized by several numbers. One is the minimal delta I, so the minimal in this list, and this is the slowest convergence. The maximum of the beta I, the highest barrier, this is the worst situation, or you can look straight at the computation time, that is basically the maximal beta I over delta I, and there is some epsilon, that is the number that I require for convergence. So this is the time that it takes to compute. Now, if I'm interested only in, if I make epsilon arbitrarily small, so I don't care about the barrier, everything will be determined by the end what happens, and it will be determined just by the distribution of the delta i's.
Is this still a Fibusevich?
Yes.
This is
Fibusevich, yes.
But your beta i is a function of t.
Right.
The beta i. So yeah. You have to compute it for all t.
Yeah, they have, right. It means they are functions of t, and now when it flow, you flow to the fixed point, these numbers flow to the value at the fixed point.
So just to fix in my mind to understand what you're doing, somebody had given you a list in which two numbers happens to differ in the 10 billion decimal
yes.
place, then that means that you have to calculate beta very high accuracy.
Well, no, I don't calculate beta. I don't calculate beta. What I do is, mm-hmm. I don't do anything. This is a formal solution. I cannot do it anything. Right. And the reason I cannot do with it, you see, because what I did here was I partitioned. That's an important question. You cannot do anything with this solution. For using this solution, you have to know the answer.
Right.
Because I partitioned this matrix into two parts,
right.
and there is just out of all the n over m partitions, there is just one partition that leads to the optimal solution. And then all the other partitions will have just some of the deltas will be positive. So there was just one partition because the deltas depend on the partition.
What do you mean by partition?
Okay. Okay.
You know how to shuffle you can rearrange the columns?
Yes, exactly.
But I thought the columns were fixed by the constraint.
Exactly. The columns are fixed, but there is a part the columns are fixed. Now I divide the variables that I have. They have n variables, and now there are m constraints.
Mm-hmm.
So there are n minus m independent variables. I have the freedom to choose who are the n minus m independent variables.
Uh-huh.
Now, there is one solution where the n minus m independent variables go to zero,
uh-huh.
and the other m variables go to some point.
So the freedom is in reshuffling the first the freedom, minus m
column. The reshuffling, it's not a freedom. For a given problem,
uh-huh.
what will happen, if someone gives you, the rules of the game is, someone gives you the matrix A, there is no partition. Someone gives you the matrix A, the B, and the C, and you run the program. And then what will happen is, eventually, it will flow to a point Well, m numbers are non-zero and satisfy the equation and satisfy the equation, n numbers are non-zero, and satisfy the equation ax equals to b, satisfy the equation bx equal to b, where b are some m columns, and the rest of the this is a set of m equations. So what will happen in the end is that there will be the algorithm will choose for you a list of m numbers that will be non-zero in x, and all the rest will go to zero. Now, now which of them are such? We don't know until we solve the problem. So I wrote here a certain partition. I decided that there are i's that go from 1 to n minus m, and there are other x's that are belong to the last m numbers. So this was something arbitrary. I have chosen to write this matrix. I said, okay, all the deltas will be positive in this way, but this happens just for one of the n over m partitions of this. For all the rest, if I don't divide it like this, I decide to choose if this partition does not correspond to the optimal vertex of the solution, what will happen? You can always choose the last m columns. If you do that, you look at these numbers, you look at this equation, that they will not just not, the solution will not flow to that point because the deltas are positive. You run away from such a point. You can start near such a vertex. There are, each of these solutions describes a vertex of this polyhedron. But if you start next to that vertex, you will run away from that vertex. Okay? Therefore, this is a formal solution. It's useless. It is just useful for our argumentations. It is not useful to solve the problem. Okay? Is this point clear? Because this is a crucial point in all this game. That we, because otherwise, naively, you would ask, I have a solution, why to bother? It means there is an analytical solution. The problem with this solution, it's a formal solution. You have to know which is the optimal vertex, and then you can run it. So now, I want to know, so you don't run it like this.
So it's local in nature.
The stability?
Yeah, the vertex.
Well,
it's not a global.
It's a global solution of the linear programming problem. This was Fibusovich proved. Now, and this is a result of the linearity. The fact is, and the reason that it is global, the answer for this, and this is the question that one usually asks, why it is global? Because of linearity. Because with time, E grows all the time. So there is just one stable solution to this.
But what's the problem then?
What's the problem is you don't know it in advance. You have to find it. You have a huge number of variables. The problem, there is no problem if the number of variables is 10, 20 that you can look on it. The problem is huge. And then you don't just...
It's global by any efficient.
Pardon?
It's global by any efficient.
Well, it is efficient if you don't look at the... Well, you can do... what you can do is you can check all the n over n fixed points, and that's what you are in stable, no problem. If you do that, that's a solution. You found it. But that is an exponential amount of work for a polynomial problem, and you don't want to do it. However, if you run the algorithm will find that point. It will flow there. If you not check all the other vertices. Okay? And now all this convergence. So what is what are the okay? So is what the formal the role of the formal solution clear? Because otherwise we don't. It should be clear what we want to solve. Okay. So then now if I make arbitrarily small only what delta minimum, that is the convergence rate, really counts for the solution. Because if I take others, it's because most of the time the computer will spend the last point. However, for this problem, sometimes you need only to to identify which vertex is it. If you, for this sometime, you have to be just convinced that you are over the barrier. Because if you have some fixed point, sometimes you don't have, so this is the Bayesian boundary of it, and this is the epsilon vicinity. If I want to know that I flow to here, I just have to know that I cross the Bayesian boundary. So sometimes I don't have to flow that long. So then, what counts is all the landscape around that is given by the barriers. And now what we do is we introduce a probabilistic model that A, B, and C, the constraints and the functions you have to minimize, are taken from a random ensemble of independent variables. And the question is, what is the distribution of delta minimum, beta maximum, and T? This is the mathematical question that we have to solve. And now we're going to present a partial solution. What's a partial solution? I will give you an exact solution for delta and numerical solutions for beta and T. Now, okay, so first of all, what is the difficulty? So I would like really to calculate delta, and now for delta...
Somehow in your hypothesis, your constraints that were in A and are going to be Gaussian, right?
Yes, all of them are Gaussian from the same...
It seems to me like you were saying restricting the problem to to a class which is very much reduced.
That we can argue in the end, because this is what you always do in a big branch of physics. For example, if you study nuclear physics and you look at the levels of nuclei, they are not from a Gaussian ensemble. They can be different interactions. And so it's the same hypothesis. Except the hypothesis for nuclear physics and for chaotic systems, you heard many times, and you accepted it by hearing it many times. And representing some data. This is the first time, and therefore it's good to argue about it. So the point now is, I want to remind you what we want to do. So it means, first of all, we have the delta that is given by this equation. This and this will be, because this is these are entries of this matrix zero, this will be given as random variables. We know this, we have to find the distribution of this. That's a well-defined mathematical problem, except there is a difficulty here, because this is for a given partition. If I have the partition, I know how to do it. But now the question that I want to ask for the optimal partition. Now, I don't know in advance who is the optimal partition. So for this, however, the symmetry of this ensemble helps us. And now what we do is, we have to calculate. So first of all, I want to tell you that the distribution is the same for the optimal partition and for any partition. So that is a simple exercise in probability. What you do is, we want to calculate delta, the probability that delta minimum is larger than some delta, given there is a solution to this problem, the delta minimum is positive. Now, the standard trick is to decompose it in events that have a zero intersection. So, omega j, wj, is the event that j is the optimal partition, and there are n over m such events, and therefore I just decompose this probability in this way. That's a standard way of standard decomposition. But this event is included in the event the delta minimum is a solution. Therefore, I have to worry only about this one. But now, because of the symmetry of the ensemble, all of these are the same. All the variables in the sum are the same. So we find that this is equal to this one. But this is for the partition W1, and therefore the next is to say, okay, to define what the probability that delta min is larger than delta if one is in the event W1, and then this is the same. I now define delta min as the minimum of the deltas if I take the partition 1. So this is of course equal. Then I use the definition of conditional probability, and then but delta mean positive is included in P, delta mean larger than delta if delta is positive. So I get this ratio, and what is this ratio is, what this is, this is what I'm interested in, is the probability that the delta mean is larger than some delta. Well, this is the probability that it's larger than some delta in a specific partition. And this is, and this I'm going to calculate by random matrix theory. Because that's a naturally posed problem for random matrix theory. Well, and I have this normalization. This normalization is just 1 over 2 to the n minus n. This is just trivially because of the symmetry that having a positive and a negative number is the same for this. Okay, so now we have a well-defined random matrix theory. And now I will go quickly to this. Now, I just want to give you, then I will show you, I will demonstrate it to you that these two are equal. And this is, if you do sampling of these two things that I claim it are equal, you see perfect agreement. Now, here was something else was tested here that I don't have time to enter because there are something that's called empty problems, that you sample a problem and it has no solution. So these problems are also evenly distributed among all the other problems. This will also show, and therefore nothing really. So this is just to see that our programs work very well, and the, just to check, have to check the numerical programs. Now, okay, so what we do now next is, and this is something that is a very complicated calculation, and this is really was great work of Joshua Feinberg. This is just a tour de force of random matrices. And one of the most complicated things technically that I was ever involved in. Now you start with this, the deltas are given in this way, but these are random matrices. They are, they are not square matrices and they are not Hermitian. And then what you do is, and you have this distribution, you have this Gaussian distribution, and now you, first of all, you calculate the joint probability of all the deltas. For this, you have to integrate integrate over these variables given this equation as a constraint. So this is, with indices, this metric, write up of this matrix equation. Then it turns out that you can find a variable u that is given in this way and express everything in terms of this variable. And then what you the joint probability distribution is given as a distribution in terms of this variable u. And now the hard part of the calculation calculate this probability distribution. It's done by expansion into moments, and then one can use this well-known there are well-known theorems when the distribution is given uniquely by moments. And then in the end you find that asymptotically in the limit of large n and m, this is a very simple distribution. And then you plug it into here, and then you go ahead and calculate. And when you go and calculate, you do this calculation, you find a very simple function. And now what you find is that the cumulative distribution is the probability, the delta mean that is smaller than some delta, that is a function of f, that's a function of n, m, the number of variables, the number of constraints, and the number of delta, takes this very simple form where x delta is proportional to delta, and here there is a proportionality constant that roughly goes like square root of m. And then this function of three variables asymptotically turns out to be a scaling function. That's a scaling function. It's a function just of one variable, that is this variable, the scale variable x delta. And now let me show it to you how quickly you get this, to this limit. This limit is approached extremely fast. So this is, of course, the blue lines are the results, and are the analytic results. The circles are results of numerical simulations. And you see that at 40 you are not very close. When you go up to 80, you cannot distinguish these lines anymore. Without color, you cannot see the difference. So you approach very fast. And now let me show you what it means that it's a function just of one variable. That is what we call a scaling function, usually in statistical mechanics. It looks in this way. Well, this is the first, the one that deviates is m equal to 4. All the rest of the data collapse one on top of the other. And then what it actually means, that if we know this function for very small problems, we know it for very long problems. And then, now what can we conclude from this knowledge? What we can conclude from this knowledge is that typically, what we conclude from this knowledge is typically that 1 over delta mean scales like root of m. Because basically, if you fix the value of the scaling variable, it appears root of m and delta appear only in this combination. And in the formal language of in this field, it said that with high probability, this holds. With high probability means that the probability goes to 1 when m goes to infinity.
It is
pages of algebra. I will supply it. It's in the paper.
Given a list of numbers.
Yes.
This is confusion between n and m. The list of numbers n long, right?
It's yes.
Numbers.
And m is the number of constraints.
And delta is, and m is the number of constraints. Delta is the minimum.
No.
Between
No. Delta
is the separation between two numbers. Right?
No. Delta is the convergence rate. It's the minimum of all the convergence rates. It's the inverse of the time that it will take you to compute.
I see. So the time scales like square root. There's a number constraint, but independent of n.
Well, it was no. Very good.
It's independent of n. That's right.
Okay, fine. It depends on n and m only through this combination. It depends only on this combination. Now, in the plots, in many of the numerical experiments, we kept the ratio fixed. But the analytical result, it depends only on this combination.
But for fixed m, if I increase n, of course, it should also go up with
Of course, it will increase, but I tell you how it increases.
What is eta delta? Eta delta is the same as 1 over delta?
No. The variable is x, well, it's delta, times eta delta, and eta delta is given here.
I see.
So all the convergence rate is not a function of these three numbers separately, it's a function only of the combination.
Okay. I see.
Okay?
Yeah. So, I probably missed this, but, I mean, this question of whether you're going to converge at all seems important.
Right? Yeah, so now the theory tells you that you will. To one point, you will converge. This is what
you're saying. I thought the point that there was some part of the space where delta minimum is less than zero or equal.
Yeah. It means there are some partitions. What you can do is you can write a formal solution. Mm-hmm. You can partition it. It means you can choose the m variables out of the n variables the way that you wish. That's a freedom that you have, and you have formal solutions for them. Then for all the n, or for all the n over m except one of them. One of them, you will not converge. Just for one of them, you will converge, the one that goes to the optimal vertex. And it's because of the linearity. The reason that you have just one vertex like this, you look at a polyhedral and take a plane for fixed E. And this plane, with time, increases until it hits the maximal polyhedral. So this is... What Fibusovic did in this algorithm was to design a flow that constrains you to the polyhedral, and it constrains you to float there. So this is assured by the theory that if there is a solution, it will find it. The only thing that we ask is, what will be the distribution of these times?
There's a basic theorem that the constraints define the polyhedra, the boundaries of the polyhedra,
yes.
And the maximums assumed in one of the vertices.
Yes. Yeah, and then explain this. Yeah, this is the basic theorem, and I explain it now intuitively. This is where it goes. Of course, you can write it with Riemannian geometry, and this is in the paper of Fibusovich. So this was Fibusovich. This is the work of Fibusovich.
What year is Fibusovich?
Which year is it? I will answer you after the talk. No, it's not recent. It's not recent. I'm telling you, it's not a state-of-the-art algorithm. Okay? So now, I'm told that I have to converge. So now, for the other variables, for beta and p, we don't have a theory, but we did numerical simulations, and they also turn out to be scaling functions. So this is when you increase them, when you draw them as a function of some scaling variable, you see that all the data collapses. This is for beta, and there's the same plot for t. Now, so let me now summarize the results, and everyone that wants more details, I will be happy to discuss them. Okay, so the summary is, first of all, analytically, we find the distribution function for the convergence rate turns out to be a simple function. I wrote it to you. It's just two Gaussians, a Gaussian times an error function. And it depends just out of these three possible variables asymptotically on one variable. And this is analytical. Now, for the computation time or for the barrier, numerically, you have similar functions. Now, the use of a scaling function can be, even if you know it only numerically, is that you can calculate it for all values of m, of n and m, and then you can know the result for all values of n and m. Now, to do it, not by this flow, but in the beginning we tried to do it just by, before we had analytical results, it convinced it's a scaling function, we just tried to test it on the computer with different partitions, very quickly, you just run out of resources. Now, with high probability, it means with probability 1 at large m, if you make a calculation, delta mean, it means the convergence time will scale like root of m, beta max will be like m, and the computation time will be like m log m. So the question is, if someone is not malicious, but just one takes a problem at random from a bag, this is what will happen. Now, however, in the continuum, you can be infinitely malicious. Now, the question is, now you can ask, how often does it happen? So to know how often it happens, you have just to calculate the FD delta at delta equals to zero. This is the dangerous region. And that the answer is finite for the Gaussian ensemble. Now, if you're interested asymptotically in small epsilon, so this gives you all the solution. Otherwise, if you want to identify the vertex, you need the distribution P of T that we know only numerically. Now, then the question is, first of all, the questions that are left, and some of you asked, how general is the existence of scaling functions? If I don't take a Gaussian distribution, I take another distribution. If I go to other problems, the not linear programming, do they always scale? Well, I don't know, it means. If you use our experience in statistical mechanics, is that it happens very often, but we don't know for this type of problems. Now, how important is the fact that distribution is Gaussian? For our experience from Mandrell random matrix theory, it's not important if a matrix is large enough. Now the other question you can ask, what happens if you look at the linear, at the empirical distribution of linear programming problems? There is a library where there are all the linear programming problems are tabulated, and you can calculate the metrics for them, and ask what's the empirical distribution, and test it for it.
The
ones that were published, yes. There is someone that collect these problems that are of engineering interest and ask for the ensemble of these problems, what is the ensemble of the solution times in this way?
A lot of these arise in business where inventories,
but in the end, they are well-defined mathematical problems. They are given by matrix A, by a B and a C. And then you can look at them
I was having a study like in business schools by the person out there, how ones that are...
Pardon?
Okay.
Okay, and then, but for our point of view, the challenging part is to find the analytical distributions of T and beta max, and we did not succeed to do it, to find analytically. And now the difficult problem is that then it depends, there are correlations. Well, we could not set it as independent of partitioning. And this is something that we are trying to do. So these are the questions. Anyone is welcome to solve them. And thank you very much.
Do you have good reasons to believe that the Gaussian assumption is unimportant, that we can?
Not in addition to the general flavor of random matrix theory. Usually, no, I don't have.
It depends very much on the character of the quantity you compute with one ensemble or the other. So from quantum chaos, we know that. Spacing distributions and low order correlation functions of the level density are insensitive to the
yes.
choice of the ensemble. Is there some analogy to
I don't know.
It's completely open.
It's open.
But the numerical analysis.
Well, we did not.
With another.
Of course, we can do it. It's just a question of doing it. Yes, sure.
Oh, you haven't yet done it.
We haven't done it. Means it's. Yeah, I want to hear some responses or hear problems, and then we'll decide what is the next step. It means there's no principal difficulty of doing it numerically. Theoretically, well, our first challenge was we didn't want to do. Too much numerical work before we had some analytical result. And it is, I can assure you that the analytical result is a very difficult random matrix calculation. You have to do several ensembles, you get serious. In the end, after the calculation is done, it looks very simple. But in the beginning, it is, for example, there is this summation of the moments. So in the beginning, we did Borel summation. But then you realize that you can guess the function. You had to make some assumptions. In the beginning, we tried to do 7 points everywhere, and the point of zero turns out to be terrible, too singular for this. So it's it means the calculation was completed just now when I came here. So we will, then now we'll try to do more.
Question?
Yeah.
Well, I guess quadratic programming problems are a little
beyond.
There's kind of a field of quadratic programming.
Yeah. Well, the initial motivation was to try to look at the simplest problems that one can discuss. Well, the initial motivation was to start to develop some theory for analog computation. Now, however, there is no way, we don't know how to make a universal theory. You well know that there is a universal theory of Smell and Kovacs of computation over the reals that is mathematically terribly involved. And there is a difficult problem to relating it to reality. So in some way we tried to develop it, and then we say, okay, we can. It's very hard to do it in general. Let's try to study standard examples. And one of the first standard examples that you come across in this field is linear programming.
That's something they solve it often by duality. That's kind of a dual linear programming problem.
What is that?
I think you transpose the constraints or some duality approach.
Well, there are approaches that change the rule of the game at each stage. And these are the way that we solved it, in numerical simulation, you go to the computer, you call an IMSL program. But in that IMSL program is such an algorithm.
Well, are there any other questions? No, let's thank Shmuel again.
Thank you.